Hello and welcome back. My name is Luke and you're listening to another episode of the Next Stage podcast by Web Summit. The Hyperloop Public Transportation Project is the ultimate blend of science fiction and reality. At peak speed, a Hyperloop connection between Web Summit's Dublin and Lisbon offices would cut commuting time via plane by more than half. We hear from Hyperloop CEO Rob Lloyd and Shervin Pijavar of Sherpa Capital as they discuss the impact this project could have on public transportation with Forbes' Bruce Upbin.
So how many of you heard of the Hyperloop before? Or want to take a ride on one as soon as the first tube is built? Yeah, right? So it's real. I mean, that was the headline of the cover story in Forbes. The Hyperloop is real. Elon Musk put out a white paper, I think it was three years ago maybe, and he called it if a railgun and an air hockey table and the Concorde had a three-way, this is what it would be. But it literally could change the world. So with me is Rob Lloyd here, Shervin Pijavar, to his right, founder, CEO. So Rob, I'll start with you. So what is the Hyperloop that you're doing? How different is it from what Elon envisioned?
So the basic architecture is very simple, very elegant, and it actually works. And the team that Brogan Van Brogan, our founder, that studied at the University of Elon Musk for a decade, one of the first 25 employees there, is innovating around that basic construct, that we can reduce the pressure in a controlled environment, we can use levitation technologies to reduce the friction from wheels, we can create an electric motor that moves something very quickly, and in that environment we can create speeds we've never thought about possible. All that is happening right now, and we're buying steel and we're buying tube, and we're actually producing the technology that will make this a reality. So. It's a business of builders and a team of 70, and the progress has been astounding.
So it was a little bit of a career change for you, because I don't know if you people know, but you were a top guy at Cisco, number one or two, and now you're doing this. This is a very different world. Why'd you make the switch? I mean, how could you possibly apply those skills? Not that they're non-admirable skills, but those skills to this exciting adventure.
Yeah, so I felt when I met Shervin and heard of the opportunity, we had a very fortuitous intersection. I thought the patterns that I'd recognized as the internet developed over 20 years, of the backbone expanding as we saw new access technologies, and every time there was a major iteration, we needed a new backbone. And I thought, wait a minute, we are seeing driverless cars and on-demand economy evolve. And the fundamental backbone of the transportation infrastructure we have today is based on century-old technology. So it felt like there was an opportunity, meeting Brogan and the team, seeing the board of directors that Shervin had assembled behind this project, and the initial capitalization, it was like, this is going to happen, and I just have to go there. So it's been great.
So Shervin, walk us through the formation of the company, like why you did it. And how you put it together, because it's a pretty interesting story.
Sure, absolutely. It was in conversations with my friend Elon Musk before he had published his white paper. And in those conversations, I realized the absolute importance of making Hyperloop a reality as fast as possible. Much of our world is held back by infrastructure that has been planted in the ground from the 20th century. And it's degrading and falling apart. And so the world is moving slower and slower, as we should be moving faster and faster. And so I made a commitment there and then to try to do everything I can to assemble the greatest minds in the world, and was very lucky to meet my co-founder, Brogan Van Brogan, who was at SpaceX before for almost 10 years, helping Elon and his mission to reach Mars. And every top engineer there kept saying K-Bro, which was his nickname at the time. He's the guy who can actually build this. And he's one of the most talented engineers I've ever met. And one of the unique things about him is that he wants to show you things. He doesn't care about something on a design board or a whiteboard unless it's something he can actually build in real time. And now he's built a team of 70 people at our headquarters, our 3-acre campus in downtown Los Angeles. So from inception of the idea to now, we've assembled some incredible people, and Rob Lloyd joining as CEO in the last month and a half is an incredible milestone for us, and all the more meaningful for me that we're here in Dublin, because Dublin actually has played a big role in my own career. I signed the Uber term sheet here 3 years ago, mm-hmm. at the Shelbourne Hotel, when Uber was only about 9,000 employees, and walked the streets of Dublin with Travis, had a pint, and is when he told me his vision for changing transportation in that way. Mm-hmm. And then last year, we actually closed the Hyperloop Series A term sheet at the Shelbourne Hotel again. So I thank Ireland for the luck of the Irish. And now we have some important news to break here as well in Dublin again.
Sure. So when I joined Hyperloop, Shervin said, now we've got to get the capital required to do this project. We have a clear focus as a company to build that three-kilometer test loop by the end of 2016. It takes money, it takes equipment, it takes people. So we're very pleased that on our road to the $80 million raise that we're under right now, that we've actually closed $26 million of that. We issued a convertible note. We attracted some phenomenal investors from around the world and lead venture capitalists like Kosla that have come in on that initial mm-hmm. round. And I'd like to just say I'm pretty confident, based on the interest we've seen around the world, we'll close that full 80 by the end of this calendar year, giving Brogan and team the opportunity to buy everything they need and every piece of equipment and every pound of steel required to achieve our Kitty Hawk moment 1 year later. So that's amazing progress. And we're pretty excited.
So what's next? So what are the key technical challenges that have to happen? Because I don't know if people have read the paper, but there's a tremendous speed. There's a vacuum tube. It's miles of steel. There's a pod going hundreds of miles an hour on a little cushion of air. So a lot of this, none of this stuff is really been done before. So.
Yeah, so we can build it today. We can build everything about Hyperloop today. But in order to achieve the cost efficiencies that we need to achieve to really make it as disruptive as we believe it will be, we need to do some innovations. We'll do innovation in tube material. It'll be steel, but we can innovate across that construction. We'll be building systems to manufacture in situ, so we're not moving big pipes around, but just actually manufacturing in location. We're developing our own linear synchronous drive motor that will propel the pod, designing pods for both freight and cargo, looking at tunneling technologies so we can get right-of-way access in high-density environments. And we've even hired some very, very expert people that are helping us imagine how the tube itself would be underwater so we can cross across the oceans. And when you do that, you start changing everything. So those elements of technology, the propulsion, the levitation, the pod design, and the tube design and manufacturing are the key innovations where we're registering IP. We'll put them all together as a system and actually achieve the test at 700 plus miles an hour over 3 kilometers by the end of the year.
End of next year?
End of 2016.
Wow. Well, where is it going to be? Is it going to be in the desert somewhere?
We're just finalizing the location. We'll find a place with pre-permits so we don't have to wait. And we've ordered the steel, so we need to fill in the purchase order with the ship to address pretty quickly.
A lot of steel.
That's cool. And where do you think the first Hyperloop is going to be? I mean, I can imagine it's not going to be in the United States where there's so much NIMBY and dense buildings. And
I've been astounded by the interest, and Brogan and I are actually leaving here, and he's going in one direction, I'm going another. There are projects around the world that are looking at what they've been trying to do to build infrastructure for economic advantage. There are parts of this planet that believe that infrastructure is a capability that drives GDP and value. We think the disruptive nature of creating an on-demand infrastructure where you don't imagine that we set up big trains, but we only move a pod when it's required. We transform how we think of real estate development and how we think of ports. I actually think the interest is inbound. It's very global in nature right now. And my gut tells me we'll be seeing interest that will probably enable us to pick those first three projects that demonstrate the disruptive nature of this technology starting in 2017. And we'll have three projects underway. And close to completion by 2020.
Wow. So, Shervin, you've thought a little bit more about how this could change the way we live and where we live. Rob was just alluding to it. Can you walk us through, physically, what would happen? Like, what kind of people would this appeal to? Who would be using it? Is it going to be expensive? Is it like a $5 trip? Is it a $1,000 trip? What do you think is going to, how's it going to play out?
I'll start with the implications on our global economy. At the top level, Hyperloop will make the world a village again. It will compress space and time. It won't matter where we actually live and work anymore. You'll be able to commute distances of 300-400 miles per hour or more a day in, 20-30 minutes. And so your daily commute that you spend in traffic currently today, wasting time and polluting the planet, all of those things begin to ease away. One of the things that we also see is that it makes the world a greener place. Because we're doing cargo as well as people transport, one of the things we realized, and this was a shocking fact that most people don't know, the top 15 largest cargo ships in the world pollute the world more than all the cars combined. More than a billion cars, 15 ships. That just can't stand anymore. We need to protect our planet. And Hyperloop will begin to build a completely new transportation grid that can move atoms as fast as we've moved bits, and move people and things around the world and route them efficiently. And those are the great benefits. In terms of the global economy, we begin to introduce the idea of manufacturing and delivery in real time, as Rob talked about in the on-demand economy, which at Sherpa Capital, that's one of our founding areas of investment. The reason that's important is that we can actually deliver things at the speed of thought. So you're able to actually order something and then have it manufactured, distributed, and delivered all within a 24 to 72 hour period of time. What that does is it gets rid of all those warehouses with depreciating assets, wasting away. It takes inventory financing and compresses it from 60 days, 90 days, 120 days, which is a tax on the global economy, and it compresses it into 24 hours, 72 hours periods of time. And those things have massive implications. The other aspect is you look at places that are dark today in terms of infrastructure. And you use the analogy of Africa skipping ahead from telecom, fixed line telecom, to mobile, and the impact that that's had on African economies. And you say, well, now we skip ahead of all of these old infrastructures of the 20th century, and we connect the world in places like Africa and other places that are not connected to the rest of the world in a way and in a speed that's never been done before.
And Bruce, what about real estate? We define the value of real estate by how close it is to where people live, but we can create new cities 150 miles away from a city center, and you could be there faster than you could drive today by being in the city center. So we can redefine how cities are architected. We can redefine how runways and airports are connected as kind of terminals rather than distinct airports. We can transform ports, which sit on some of the world's most valuable land, and maybe move the container offloading offshore and create an inshore, an inland port where the intermodal connections happen, 50 to 100 miles inland, that bypasses a city and gets trucks off our urban streets. So the opportunity to change so many things is almost endless. And that's why I think it's such a big, big idea.
But is it a play for the elites only? I mean, when I hear about new cities being built farther away, I think about people getting away, people who have means to get away, abandoning crumbling cities.
Well, if you were
cities.
In San Francisco right now, you'd probably find it's very difficult to find a great place to live close to work. And I was just talking to a former colleague who used to commute 2 hours to get from the North Bay to the South Bay, and that's ridiculous. That is crazy.
One of the things we found in technology and innovation is that we call this capacity utilization. So if you can more efficiently utilize the assets that exist, Uber did this with black cars and then expanded from there from UberX. And so all of these things, when you look at Hyperloop, cargo subsidizes people transport. So at the people level, it'll be extremely affordable to be able to use this mm-hmm. this kind of transportation option.
So who's the team? I mean, you were a big hire from a different space, but with the bandwidth to take this on. What kind of people are coming on board? Where are they coming from?
They're coming from everywhere, and we're attracting talent. Clearly, where we are in LA is at the hub of aeronautics and the SpaceX and the Northrop Grumman's and others. We're hiring people from GE. We're hiring people from Tesla. We are hiring brilliant, brilliant masters and PhDs. It's a level of engineering which actually is helping us achieve that speed. So great talent from companies around the world and 70 totally awesome people today, and we expect to be about 100 by the first quarter.
Okay. So this all started with Elon, and that's kind of the big elephant in the room. It's like, what's he going to do? Is he going to swing back into this, do something big? I know that some of his engineers at SpaceX are building a test track in Texas, I think. Are you guys in touch with him? Is he involved at all, or advising, or will he get more involved as time goes on?
I think Elon's greatest contribution was the invention of the idea and contributing it to the world. And his experiment was to say, I'm too busy with SpaceX and trying to get to Mars and Tesla and SolarCity, so I will contribute this idea to the world and hope that teams will assemble to bring it together. Mm-hmm. And so he's very supportive of these efforts, and we're going full speed ahead on execution.
Okay.
Hey, Bruce, I gave away ticket 1A this morning, and I wondered whether you would accept ticket 1B for our first Hyperloop journey. Are you in?
Totally.
All right.
Well,
thank you very much.
Yeah. I do want an exit row, though. Can I get an exit row?
You can get an exit row.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you already sent me a ticket. I have one on my desk.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. This is the real ticket.
This is the real ticket.
He's
okay.
Got the real ticket. Though.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. WebSummit 2020 is right around the corner, so be sure to check out websummit.com/tickets for more info.